Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Annie, I think your mic, you need to unmute your mic.
Mike, you got me now? Hello? Home Specs is unable to take your call at this time. At the sound of the tone, please leave your message. Thank you.
We did not get your message either because you were not speaking or because of a bad connection.
Oh, we got digital problems again, everybody. Sorry to hear that. Annie got dropped just as, like, the show got the introduction. So I'm sure she'll be calling right back, or she'll be jumping in on her other line. Well, good afternoon. We are glad you're here on another fun edition of Southern Sense. I am Cool Mike. Annie, who is dialing in on the other line, as you can hear, should be joining us shortly. And
I am back up. I have
okay.
No idea what happened. I apologize. I mean, I had Boyd in here from Kinetic Hi-Fi, and he was messing around with my board. And seems he did something to it where I could not broadcast. I don't know.
Well,
so hopefully we're in.
We're in. I can hear you. You can hear me. And today's date, of course, is the 28th of February, the last day of February, Friday. Annie?
Well, I'm here. This is two shows in a row that everything got completely fouled up. So I apologize to the listeners. I have no idea what was going on there, but we'll just grin and bear it. And I want to welcome everyone in the chat room and those that are listening in. We've got Sweet Sue from New Mexico listening in, so I want to give a shout-out to Sweet Sue. And anyone that listens to our show knows we start off with a dedication to a fallen hero. And usually I do it to a fallen hero that has fallen in the field of service. But this time I've chosen someone that I think the media has completely overlooked. His passing should have been on the front page of every newspaper, every media outlet, and I think only Fox News and maybe one or two other stations carried it. So today's dedication is going out to the last surviving World War II D-Day Medal of Honor recipient, Walter D. Eller, who passed away Thursday, February 20th this year at the age of 92. And this is taken from Fox News as well as from Wikipedia. Walter D. Ellers was 23 years old. He charged through enemy fire to destroy two German machine gun nests, killed seven enemy soldiers, put a halt to a mortar barrage, and carried a wounded buddy to safety, all after he had been shot in the side by a sniper. The date, June 9, 1944. The place, Normandy, France. The mission, the D-Day invasions, and the effort to liberate Europe from the grip of Nazi Germany. Born on May 7, 1921, in Junction City, Kansas, Ellers joined the Army from the city of Manhattan in October 1940. He and his older brother, Roland, served in the same unit and participated in the fighting in North Africa and Sicily. By D-Day on June 6, 1944, Ellers was a staff sergeant and squad leader in the 18th Infantry Regiment, 1st Infantry Division. His squad, part of the invasion's second wave, waited offshore in a landing craft while the first group of soldiers landed. When the first wave became pinned down on the beach, his unit was transferred to a Higgins boat and sent forward early to assist. They fought their way off the beach, and by June 9th, were near the town of Goville, 8 miles inland. On that day, he led his unit's attack against German forces and single-handedly defeated several enemy machine gun nests. The next day, his platoon came under heavy fire, and he covered their withdrawal, carried a wounded rifleman to safety, and continued to lead despite his own wounds. For his actions, he was awarded the Medal of Honor 6 months later, on December 19, 1944. Amid countless acts of bravery from young men like Ellers, the Buena Park, California resident's heroism stood out, and he received the Medal of Honor. He died of kidney failure at the age of 92. His passing leaves only seven surviving World War II Medal of Honor recipients. Walt was the kindest, gentlest person, and you never would have known he could have done the things he did, his wife Dorothy told Fox News. He always said, if it's you or them, you make sure it's them. To Ellers, however, the real hero in the family was his older brother, Roland, who enlisted with Walter in 1940. The day before the Normandy landings, the military superiors separated two brothers to improve the odds that at least one of them would survive. On July 14th, more than a month after D-Day, Ellers learned that his brother Roland had died at Omaha Beach when his landing craft was struck by a mortar shell. In later life, Ellers would say he wore the Medal of Honor for those who didn't come home, his brother included. When he returned to his hometown of Junction City, Kansas, he tried attending college with a GI Bill, but found he couldn't pay attention in class. He couldn't settle down after being through all of that, Dorothy said. So he got a job as a benefits counselor with the local Veterans Affairs office. And when he had the chance, he transferred to an office in Southern California. He even landed a movie role playing West Point cadet Mike Shannon in the 1955 John Ford film, The Long Gray Line. California was where he met Dorothy ice skating and the two of them would be married for nearly 59 years. In peacetime, Ella stayed busy by volunteering with the local Boy Scouts troop and playing harmonica. He was also a regular visitor to local schools, where children would sit raptly and listen to his stories of patriotism and courage. Ellis was survived by his daughter, Kathy Metcalf, and Tracy Kilpatrick, his son, Lieutenant Colonel retired Walter D. Ellis, Jr., his sister, Leona Porter, Marjorie Gustin, and Gloria Salberg, 11 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren. But to the end, nearly 70 years later, there was another kinship that Ellis held dear, Dorothy said. One of the last things he said before he passed away was, "Tell my Medal of Honor brothers goodbye," she said. Funeral services with full military honors will be March 8th at the Riverside National Cemetery in California. We dedicate this show to all of the brave men and women who have served, who are serving, and who will serve. We dedicate this song, "My Name is America," by Todd Allen Herndon. God bless them all.
Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. When I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up. Others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name, I
What a great dedication. Annie, you got that same problem. You got to hit that mic. But anyway, what a great dedication. Also, I have posted in our chat room a really cool link to, guess what, the movie in which our song dedications, was dedicated to. Walter D. Ehlers played Mike Shannon in the movie The Long Gray Line. Andy's going to conduct some business, but real quick, I want to read the storyline. It's kind of a close to our dedication. The life story of a salt of the earth Irish immigrant who became an Army non-commissioned officer and spent his 50-year career in the United States Military Academy at West Point. This includes his job-related experience as well as his family life and relationships he developed with the young cadets with whom he befriended, based on the life of a real person, written by Dennis Hoffman. What a great story overall.
Yes, it was.
Terrific.
And I just felt that we should have honored this man, and I was appalled that hardly anyone realized he had passed. And what was ironic was that I put the show information up last week, probably, I don't know, maybe Wednesday or Thursday last week, and when I was putting it together, I had come across, I always looked for something a little odd, and he had passed away on Thursday, so I must have finished the page on Thursday, and I said, why isn't this on the news? Why isn't this on the front page of every newspaper? I mean, the last surviving Medal of Honor winner of D-Day passed, and no one, I shouldn't say no one, but Fox News and I believe CBS had it up. And they were really the only people that put anything out there that this man, this brave, courageous man had passed, and I thought it was absolutely appalling. And the ironic part was that yesterday, last night, our friend Colin Heaton had shot an email over to me with a link to his passing, and I said, well, he's going to be honored on our show tomorrow. So I'm glad that we had a chance to do that. I do believe our guest is with us today, and
thank
I want to welcome aboard Sherry Few. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Hi, Annie. How are you?
All right. Nice speaking to you again. I think I only saw you about 2 weeks ago.
That's right.
Well, Sherry, you're running for the South Carolina Education Superintendent. You're also the founder of the South Carolina Parents Involved in Education, and that website's SCPIE, SouthCarolinaPie.org. I want to say you do some fantastic work.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm just honored to have the opportunity to educate people and particularly about the issue of Common Core, and it's been exciting to me to see South Carolina citizens wake up and recognize what's happening to our public education system.
And well, someone's got to wake up. I believe it's, 45 states now have Common Core in it?
Yes, that's correct. 45 states adopted Common Core, and there's 22 states that currently have legislation pending to get out of it. So they all quickly rushed to adopt it, and now they're recognizing all of the problems with it, and they are desperately trying to get out of it.
Well, ours is one of those states, and we're going to get into the whole thing of Common Core in a little bit, but I noticed over the last couple of days the field that you're running in has gotten a little bit more crowded.
Yes, it's very crowded.
Now we've got 11 different people, 9 Republicans and 2 Democrats running for the job.
Yeah, and I think it's 8, Annie, if I'm not mistaken, 8 Republicans. Not that 8 or 9 makes a big difference, but my last count was 8 and then the 2 Dems. So it's still a huge field. You know, it's a variety of candidates, but I certainly am unique to the field. I talk about things that none of the other candidates are talking about. In addition to that, I've been the one leading the fight against Common Core. That's what motivated me to run for superintendent of education. I had no intention of doing this until, you know, I saw the lack of leadership. There just is no leadership in the state, you know, to aggressively rid our state of this very troublesome set of standards.
Yes. Well, it is now 11 because last night Don Jordan, he's up in Camden, entered the race. He's with the – what was the college he's with? Oh, the University of South Carolina.
You know, and ironically, Camden is like 5 miles from where I live. So he is definitely in my community. I don't know who he is, but he's just another one of the education establishment folks. Everybody in the race is somewhat affiliated with the bureaucratic system that has failed us. But, you know, I'm not sure where the discrepancy is coming in with the numbers. Maybe you're still counting Shannon Erickson. I know she was listed at some time as a potential candidate, but she actually recently said she was not going to enter the race. So she's, although she had never publicly announced, some of the reporters were counting her as a candidate.
Yeah, it is. That could be a possibility. You know, exactly what is a school superintendent? You know, the state school superintendent. What's that job all about, really?
Well, the superintendent of education has the responsibility of the entire budget for education, which is huge. It's about half of our state budget. So he's responsible for the budget. Of course, he's responsible for all the staff that function at the State Department of Education. He also has the responsibility of, hello? the superintendent has the responsibility of the review of standards and textbooks, which is exactly where I'm interested in making a difference. And actually, the truth of the matter is a review of the standards can happen at the will of the superintendent. At any time that he or she desires, they can begin a review of the standards. So this was something that I learned from the subcommittee meeting this week, and I got rather excited about it. I mean, first I was sad because I realized that as much as Dr. Zase runs around the state talking about how he was the only one who campaigned against Common Core, but that I guess he assumes now it's here to stay. But the 3 years that he's been in office, he could have demanded another review of those standards at any time. And put his people on the review committee, and we could have done away with it if he sincerely was opposed to it. But the good news for me is if we aren't able to stop it through the legislature in this legislative session, should I become the next superintendent of education, that will be the first thing that I will do, is I will call for a standard review over the ELA and the math standards known as Common Core that we've adopted.
Yeah, it really did flabbergast me because, you know, I voted for Zayas because he did say he was going to go against Common Core. He was not going to allow it into the school system. I think that was very close to the words he used. I'm not going to allow it in, but yet he allowed it to come in. And
he has done very little, if anything, to stop Common Core except just tell people, you know, that I campaigned against it. And to tell you the truth, Annie, I was so disappointed in him this week. And you know, I didn't feel like speaking out against him until I saw this very action this week. With the subcommittee hearing, his staff were there to beg the Senate to keep the federally owned Common Core test, the Smarter Balance Assessment Consortium. The amendments that were made to our repeal bill were not good, but the only good thing that we did get out of it was that we were exiting Smarter Balance, which is the federal pipeline to our student-level data in South Carolina. And it's owned by the federal government. And we all know that what's taught in the classroom is driven by what's on the test. We know that teachers are teaching to the test. And there, Dr. Zay's staff were begging the Senate K-12 subcommittee to keep the Smarter Balance assessment. It was odd. And then I was at a forum with him and his protege, Sharmika Childs, who's also running for superintendent of education. They were at a forum with me in Greenville, and he got up and said, "We're trying to stop Common Core." And I just could not hold my tongue. And I followed him and Sharmika after they spoke, and I exposed the fact that he's done nothing to stop Common Core. It continues to try to keep the federally owned test of Common Core, and you know, so he's speaking out of both sides of his mouth. And I have every belief that in the coming weeks he will be endorsing Sharmeika Childs, who's the one who pushed through the science standards this summer. We had such a mess with the Common Core standards, we certainly didn't need to be rushing into the adoption of new science standards. And the original draft that came out of her office were the next generational science standards, which are the Common Core national science standards. So once we started speaking out about that, they pulled them back, they did a little window dressing, renamed them, and pushed them right through, and they were adopted because of her effort to push them through. So I'm no longer providing cover for Dr. Zeis. I'm speaking out because they are misleading the public.
Yeah. Now, our last Tea Party meeting, we had our monthly meeting a couple of days after you spoke to our group about Common Core, and Shannon Erickson, our representative, was there, and Tom Davis was talking, and the question of Common Core came up, and it disturbed me that she wasn't willing to completely pull Common Core completely out of our system. She was saying, well, there's certain aspects that we can keep. And I didn't say anything at the moment, and I just sat back and I'm listening because, you know, here I'm leading, you know, the meeting, and I want the members to ask their questions. I don't want to, you know, take it over. But I sent her a message on via Facebook, you know, questioning why she made those statements. And she would have been here, but she's had a couple of meetings because I asked her, you know, please reevaluate. And I said, I'm getting a lot of feedback about problems with this. And so hopefully we're getting her to turn. But, you know, are there any parts of Common Core worth keeping?
No, no. It is all garbage. There's nothing in the Common Core standards worth keeping. And you know, this we both know that they are national standards. And besides, you can't keep parts of them. They are owned and copyrighted. You can't change anything. You can only add up to 15%. So, you know, I don't understand, and she probably doesn't understand either. I've heard Dr. Zeis say that he likes some of Common Core. Particularly, he likes the informational text part of it, and he actually spoke about that yesterday. So, you know, the best thing to do with people that say there's good stuff that we ought to keep is ask them what's good. I'd like to know, and then we can debate them on what that is.
Yeah. I personally do not have children, so I have never gotten involved in education. But from what I'm seeing, you know, even though those of us that haven't had children should be involved because it's affecting just about every aspect of our life. You know,
That's
we
right.
go into a grocery store and they're relying on the machine to tell them how much change you're supposed to give back to a person, and they can't do that automatically in their head. You know, I call it the dumbing down of America.
Well, Annie, you're absolutely right, and that's what I tell people when I speak to them, is that, you know, in the past, when I would talk about education, people that didn't have kids in public school would just dismiss it and say, I don't have kids in school, so this doesn't concern me. But it should concern every taxpayer, first of all, because we are funding nearly half the state budget and a third of the federal budget. So most of our tax dollars go for this public education system. And the other thing that you and others who don't have kids in school need to pay attention to is, you know, I like to quote Abraham Lincoln, who said, the philosophy of the classroom of one generation becomes the philosophy of government in the next. And what has happened in the last several decades is we have allowed an intentional liberal indoctrination in public schools that has changed the minds of our own children. And I mean, I say our own children because it's happened to my children. And that's the one reason that I'm extremely passionate about this. But if it's not your children, it's the masses. It's the masses of the population. And that's why we are losing elections. And that's why we are losing our constitutional republic, because they have been at this for decades, and it's working. And now that we recognize it, and this is what I say is the only good thing that comes from Common Core, is that people are recognizing what it's doing and what we've been doing. Because Common Core is just a repackaged attempt by the federal government to nationalize education and have control of young children's minds. It's been happening for decades. It's not anything new. This is just the latest version of it. So, again, people are waking up, and they're recognizing that at the root of all of this is the intentional agenda to change our form of government.
Well, a lot of people are probably saying Common Core, you know, what the heck is it?
Well, it's a set of standards, ELA, English Language Arts, and Math. And what's interesting about the ELA standards is that they're actually supposed to be implemented across disciplines. So the ELA standards affect social studies and science, and ultimately it affects about 85% of the seat time in the classroom. So even though it's just two disciplines, it's affecting nearly every subject. And, you know, in the English Language Arts standards, there's Appendix B that gives recommended readings. And because we know that the tests are going to be aligned with the standards, most teachers are going to use those recommended readings. And some of the things that we find in there are just blatantly biased and untruthful. And they're replacing classic literature with these informational texts. And you know, modern authors rather than the classic literature, modern authors that write things like our founding fathers were misogynist and racist, and that's why our Constitution needs to be revisited. So that's what they're teaching about our Constitution through modern authors in the English Language Arts standards.
Well, it's funny because until last night, I didn't realize South Carolina in the higher education requires all the higher education institutes to teach the Constitution and Declaration of Independence. I wasn't aware of that.
Well, you know, I actually heard that yesterday myself, and I wasn't aware of it either. I hear that it's a requirement, but it's not one that's being met. So I would like more information about that. Annie, what was your source on that so I can look into that a little further?
It actually happened to have been an article, and I've got it sitting in front of me here because there was – here we go. It was from the state newspaper dated February 19th, and the article is South Carolina Colleges Under Fire About Book Course Choices. And in this, there was one young lady who came forward and said one social textbook inaccurately portrayed Ronald Reagan's presidency, saying he was a racist. There was another where a young man came forward and was complaining about the blatantly gay literature that they were forced to read that was used in textbooks. And consequently, the House budget writers this past Wednesday took away $70,000 from the College of Charleston and USC upstate for having freshmen read these books with gay themes.
Well, I am so proud of our legislature for doing that, and I'm really pleased that the media is printing these type stories. And, you know, I've known for a very long time that the post-secondary institutions, our colleges and universities, are extremely, extremely liberal. But what's happened in K-12, which is the focus of my candidacy, is that it has seeped down into K-12. And now it's got this, it's like this seamless grab at our children's minds because, you know, they want to start getting them younger and keep them longer. So, you know, in fact, Arne Duncan has said that, you know, schools ought to be open 24/7 and 6 or 7 days a week. So, and then they want our kids in preschool, you know, through their college and workforce days. So, you know, it's very sad. It starts in very young grades where they begin teaching children things about man-made climate change. You know, they evolve from apes. And then, you know, it's just a steady process. And if parents aren't aware that this is happening, and they haven't been for decades, they just really have not paid attention, or they have trusted the government. I'm not sure why parents have allowed this, but we have allowed it. And now what we have is, by the time the majority of children, because the majority of children attend public schools, by the time they become adults and start voting, they're little liberals, and we have allowed this to happen.
Well, that's true. A friend of mine, her daughter, I think she just turned 20 recently, but when she graduated high school, you know, I started talking to her, and I happened to have been sitting there with the Declaration of Independence in front of me because I was writing an editorial and I wanted to reference it, and she was talking with a liberal mindset, and after I got done with her, about, I think, 3 hours later, she is now a dyed-in-the-wool conservative because these things were not being told to her in high school. She said,
right.
everything I was telling her, she goes, I never heard that before. I didn't know it.
Right.
And this was just a mere couple of years ago. But this has been insidious. It has been in our school system. And I went back to a timeline, and I saw that the actual change started around 1965 when they started to change the school system.
Right.
And
I'm thinking
back to my own experience in the 70s. You know, here they were talking about the globe was freezing, was getting colder, we were being overpopulated. They were telling us to wear these earth shoes. I don't know if you remember earth shoes. They were the most uncomfortable shoes you ever wanted to wear, and I had a pair. I fell into that hokey. And I said, wait a minute, these are not comfortable at all.
Well, you are right, Annie, and that's why I've said, you know, it's been going on for decades. And we, you know, one of the other big things that I plan to do besides getting rid of the Common Core standards once I'm elected is I'm going to convene a task force that is going to review every South Carolina textbook that's been adopted and paid for with our tax dollars. And I'm going to have experts analyze them for truth and for bias. And, you know, some critics have said, well, everybody has their bias, so which bias are you going to use? That's not the point. The point is, if there's a controversial topic like climate change or the theories of origin, if there is controversy surrounding an issue and there is science and research on both sides, then children deserve to hear both sides of the issue. And that's not what they're getting right now. They're getting one side, and there's no reason why we can't expect public schools to provide an objective education.
Well, you would think they would give you an objective education, but, you know, what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing and learning is absolutely opposite of that. I mean, even when I went to college in the 70s, you know, I had to fight the liberal teachers there, the professors, and I pissed quite a few of them off, I can tell you that.
Well, why would you expect anything different? I mean, they took what the governors put together as a Common Core, and the feds revised it. Sherry, thanks for joining us. Cool Mike here. Quick question. I always ask this for every candidate. You sound great. I mean, you sound terrific. And as we know, most candidates do. Say you win and you are a new superintendent and say some powers that be that throw a lot of money around come and put their arm around you. Say, well, congratulations, Sherry. Let me show you how we do things around here. Well, how do you reply to that?
Well, you know, first of all, I sound great to you, and I appreciate that compliment. But the things that I'm saying, you won't hear any of the other candidates saying because they think it's a nail in their coffin. They don't think that they can get elected by saying the things I'm saying, and most of them probably don't even believe the things I'm saying. So to start with, I am saying controversial things that could potentially jeopardize my candidacy, but that's not what's motivating me to run. What's motivating me to run is that I believe that it's time that we stop this indoctrination of our children through the public school system, and I think the timing is perfect for our not only our state but our nation to rally against this. And I think that I have an opportunity here to lead the fight. And so I just say that as a preface, and then should I be approached by these folks, which I don't think they would know me very well, if they were to approach me and expect me to compromise my principles. But I would not cower to the things that I believe. And I plan to turn the State Department of Education upside down. And I hope to set a precedent for the rest of the country that a candidate like myself can become elected and that they can do something similar in their state and we can begin. And, you know, part of the solution is getting government out of education. Well, you know, if we're going to be successful in providing objective education to children, we're going to have to get government out of the way and give parents choices. So that's another big piece of this. You know, we need to allow the free market to provide our solutions in education and allow parents and local communities to decide what's in the best interest of their children and let the tax dollars follow the child instead of paying a bloated bureaucracy. So those are the kinds of things that we can now do, I believe, because the public, you know, most parents I talk to parents that are in some of the best school districts in the state, and they are exiting the public school system and making big sacrifices to put their kids in private school or homeschool them. So now these parents who have turned a blind eye to school choice before because they felt like, well, my kids are in the best school district in the state, so I'm not, you know, that wasn't an issue for them. Now it is. So now is the time to really jump on school choice, get government out of education, and make the changes. And we can start right here in South Carolina, and we can be a leader for a change.
Now, you mentioned school choice. That was going to be the next topic I brought up, because when I went onto the school website, you know, Zayas's website, you know, he's touting school choice, school choice, school choice. But when you read it, it says, oh, we've got all these great different systems. We've got the charter schools. We've got, you know, the religious schools. We've got this and that. All these choices for parents, except you do not have the choice of what public school you enter, on top of which there's no voucher system. So if you have someone that's, you know, who's at the poverty level or someone who's just scraping by, they're stuck with the public school system. They're stuck with whatever district they're in because they can't afford the other choices. So there's no voucher system.
Right,
so
right.
You can't truly call it school choice here.
Right. Well, you know, the other side, or I'll call them the education bureaucrats, have done what they so often do is they've co-opted our school choice term. And so now they've got this thing called public school choice. And, you know, that's not really choice. Choice is when parents can choose between homeschool, private school, virtual school, or public school. I mean, if they want public school, if they want Common Core, they should have that choice. But we have to get government out of the system and let the free market develop the education system and let the parents choose the school and let the money follow the child. So whether that's vouchers or tax credits, I understand that there's some legislation that passed in Texas, and I need to do a little more research on it. I was talking with a national expert named Cynthia Dunbar yesterday, and, you know, there are ways that we can get the free market to work through education to bring about the solutions that we need.
Amen to that. Amen to that. Now, people keep on saying that it was the National Governors Association that helped cobble this together. But that association really isn't full of all governors, is it?
No. In fact, our governor, Nikki Haley, is not a member of the National Governors Association. It's NGA is a trade organization that is heavily funded by the federal government. So, you know, to say that it was state-led because, you know, the leading elected official in every state was, you know, made this decision is just not true. It was Bill and Melinda Gates money, over 100, actually I saw a new figure, I think it's nearly $200 million have been funneled into the NGA through the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to push this national standard scheme. And in addition to that, they receive a lot of money from the federal government. So this whole effort, even though NGA owns and has copyrighted the standards, they're really have been pushed, and the whole movement has come from Bill and Melinda Gates and the federal government, the Obama administration.
So actually then, you know, parental input and educators' input into this is basically non-existent?
That's exactly right. And there's no accountability. Nobody knows what the governance and accountability is going to be for these standards. If a parent or a teacher is dissatisfied with the standards, who are they going to go to? And of course, we're learning now that, you know, they can go to their principal, their superintendent, and nobody's listening. They just continue to recite the talking points by the developers that half of them are not even true, and they dismiss the parents' concerns, and they keep rolling forward. But, yeah, there's no recourse for parents or for teachers that are dissatisfied.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's mind-blowing, isn't it?
Well, not only indoctrinates the child, it takes a teacher. And, you know, I think teachers get a bad rap. I think you go into education not to get rich but to teach. And it almost winds teachers up like, you know, like the old robots. Hello, good morning, my name is Mrs. Jones. Just like that. I mean, it's almost like your day's scripted courtesy of the federal government.
Well, you're exactly right. And I also think teachers get a bad rap. And we've been hearing from teachers. We have heard from hundreds of teachers, especially through the survey that we have online, and they are afraid to speak up. So that's why you're not hearing about them in the public. You're not hearing about them in the legislature. The only people that the legislature is hearing from are the education bureaucrats, the superintendents, and, you know, the school administrators. But teachers are afraid to speak up because they have been intimidated. And teacher intimidation is not a new thing. It happens in this state. And it's got to change. That is something I don't know how we change it. I've been actually talking with some teachers about this issue, and they understand it's happening, and it's bad, and it's got to stop. But that's another thing I hope to do as superintendent of education is to look at the laws and look at the contracts with teachers. We've got to figure out a way that we can protect teachers from intimidation when they recognize failure, when they recognize failure in the classroom and they're afraid to speak up and report. I mean, parents and teachers are the most important ingredient in a child's education. None of these other positions really amount to anything for the outcomes of a child. But those are the two opinions and perceptions that are the least valued in the public education system as it exists.
Now, recently the Palmetto Policy Forum put out a report in which you criticized, and of course the blowback against you was phenomenal. In fact, in one of the articles about the debate that you attended with two other candidates, they called you an extremist. I think you should be patting yourself on the back there, Sherry.
That's a great compliment right there.
Oh, goodness. So I missed that article. Are you saying that Palmetto Policy Forum called me an extremist?
No, it was the person that wrote the article about the debate, and I've got it in front
okay.
of me. If I can just pull it up, I'll tell you who wrote the article. Here we go. Common Core dominates the debate. This was in scnow.com, and Ellen Meder? Ellen Meder, M-E-D-E-R is the reporter. And
well, congratulations, Sherry. That's a great compliment right there.
Oh, it was your fellow candidate, Dr. Montrose Belton, that called you an extremist.
Okay. Well, that doesn't surprise me. that was the first debate, a candidate forum. It was very early on. There should have been Gary Burgess and Elizabeth Mosley should have been there. I shouldn't have been the only Republican, but they were no-shows. They just didn't even show up. So there I was on the stage, sandwiched between two Democrats, candidates in a forum provided by teachers. So it was kind of a scary situation. But nonetheless, I spoke my mind, and I continued to pound the Common Core issue, and I really did try to appeal to the teachers there to tell them things like I just said. You know, I'm not against teachers, and I'm for good education, but what we have now is not good education. And what we've got to do is we got to provide academic freedom not only for parents but also for teachers, because the point that one of you made earlier is that their classrooms are being totally micromanaged by the federal government. So I would think that academic freedom would appeal to them. In addition, this idea of tying their evaluations to the outcome of tests is really a bad idea. And I know that some Republicans support that, but especially when you have faulty standards where students are not going to be successful. Their test scores are going to be poor. So to penalize teachers through their evaluation for the outcome of tests where students can't possibly do well is very wrong.
Now, I agree, and I have a friend of mine, a very good friend of mine, and whenever you mention anything about Common Core, the look on her face just says it all. And unfortunately, here in Beaufort County, as I understand, the teachers were told not to talk about it at all. So basically, their right of free speech has been inhibited by the school district, and they have
no
recourse.
Absolutely.
They have no recourse. If they speak out, they lose their job.
Right, right, and that's what's got to change, and that's why that'll be another issue for me. But we saw a similar thing, and it wasn't even hidden. The principal of Greer High School, when we did a forum up there, invited his teachers to attend. And we have the actual email. I mean, they're not even ashamed of the email that he sent. He claims it. The email told the teachers that they could attend, but they were not to speak up, that they were not to participate. And, you know, that is a really, really sad day when we recognize that teachers no longer have their free speech, which is guaranteed to them by the Constitution. And it's really, it's even sadder like I explained earlier, when the teachers are the most important thing, the teachers and parents, and yet they don't want to hear from them.
Absolutely. You know, I attended a county council. I shouldn't say a. I've attended many county council meetings, and it was where they were changing of the guard here, and the teachers had attended, but they were sitting in the back, and some of us were saying, well, go up and speak. Tell us what's going on. And they said, we can't. They were telling us that they were not allowed to speak, even about, you know, internal issues about, you know, changing of the guard, you know, school board or staff. They weren't allowed to talk out at all. And I personally think the teachers, of course, the state of South Carolina should unite in a class action lawsuit and fight for their freedom of speech.
Well, I think that would be awesome. And you know, this points to the fact, too, that Common Core really is not a partisan issue, even though you and I are labeled extremists and tinfoil hat folks and all of that. The New York Teachers Union came out against Common Core a few weeks ago, and then just last week the NEA has dumped Common Core. So, you know, these are very liberal organizations, teachers unions, that are doing what's right and protecting teachers. So I'm really hoping that the South Carolina Education Association, the affiliate with the NEA, is going to be willing to reconsider their position on this. And I think if they can provide shelter to teachers, then they might be more willing to speak up.
If you look at one of the things the Republicans love to do is bash the NEA, but of course, if you look over the past 6 months, they've removed an awful lot of the liberal leadership. That's one of the reasons they're stepping forward. You know, it's always you have a teacher who's gifted, and a lot of times, some people are. We always have to have a supervisor, whether it's a principal, a vice principal, etc. But the problems began all this in education, from my standpoint, is when all of a sudden, we're not allowing teachers to really thrive at what they do best, and that's educate. And you hand them this scripted program where it said basically you should just swallow one of the magic Obama pills or whatever you want to call it, and all of a sudden you're talking like a robot. You're not really you're teaching classroom style where you're not where when you want to talk about a mountain, you can't take the kids a mile down the road to climb one. Or you talk about a park, you can't go a block over and walk in. You teach it from the classroom itself. Where, I mean, it's just sad. And that's, to me, that is the biggest crime, is when you have these teachers that are very good, very talented, because teaching's an art and it's a skill trade of patience and many other things, but all of a sudden now they cannot become the magician that they were hired to do because they're limited with one hand tied behind their back. And the other hand, frankly, is probably amputated by state government bureaucracy.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, what's happening in the classroom is that teachers are teaching to test. And they are forced to do that because of the standardization of the curriculum. So, you know, schools and districts and now teachers even are being evaluated by the outcome of these tests. So they have to teach what's on the test. So instead of teaching to children, they're teaching to test. And they're treating children like they are statistics. So, you know, it's the federal government micromanaging the classroom, and there is no freedom for teachers to have creativity and flexibility in their classroom to teach children the way that they think they are most easily going to learn the subject matter. So, you know, you've hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what's happening, and that's what needs to change. And that's why I hope that I will appeal to some teachers in the state, especially those who recognize that there are these problems. And then, like you mentioned, then they're held accountable. They're expected to, you know, have great outcomes, and yet they're not allowed the freedom to produce the best product.
This has become corporatized, and this happened just – couple weeks ago, and it's online. I'll post the link in our chat room. I'm not sure if it was the state, our state standards or the feds or how it works, but one of the schools here in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where I live, it came under huge media scrutiny. Now, this is in the paper. Them not even doing research on how miserable the test scores for this school are, that 3 years in a row they've just gotten horrible Turns out it's a special needs school. There's not one student who is not of autistic or some sort of handicap. I mean, they didn't even know this. The press printed this and didn't even, like, interview teachers or principals. Just basically going by numbers and I mean, this is, again, because the bureaucracy is so big, there was no one there to say that Lincoln School is a special needs school. I mean, a situation where, you know, Sherry, we need an army of people like you busting through here, crusaders on your horses to start slapping some people around, let them know what's going on.
One of the things I brought up with Shannon Erickson, because she was talking about, you know, adhering to the math and English, and I had mentioned that the teachers are teaching only so the kids can pass the test, and I'm hearing a lot of feedback, blowback from people saying the kids are getting nervous, they're getting frustrated, and now the parents are seeing behavioral problems, and I also noticed an uptick in the news in behavioral problems in schools. And I asked her, you know, don't you think that maybe this Common Core standard has everyone so uptight and frustrated this is causing the behavioral problems?
And, well, I'm just curious what her response was. I mean, how did she defend her position after you told her that?
She basically said, I'm going to look into this.
Yeah.
So, in other words, she's had the wool pulled over her eyes, and I'm hoping that it'll come off.
Well, you know, we did a really excellent forum in York County last week, and both sides were presented, and it was sponsored by Senator Hayes, the chairman of the K-12 Senate Committee. We had about 400 people show up to this forum, and in the back of the room, it was standing room only, and there were about four rows of people stood for 2 hours. I mean, it was an awesome event. So both sides were presented. The other side, our side was myself and Jane Robbins. The other side was some school district level staff. I think they're assistant superintendents. Well, when they had the chance to rebut what we were saying about the K-3 standards being developmentally inappropriate and young children exhibiting symptoms of anxiety and depression and crying and not wanting to go to school because they weren't capable of the abstract thought that is required by these standards, their response was, well, then none of that is true, and we haven't had any problems with our children that age. So then when it came to the Q&A time, two parents stood up in the audience, and they were livid, and they were almost in tears. And they said, I cannot believe that you are dismissing this charge, and then they described their own children and the symptoms that they're exhibiting. So, you know, what we've come down to, and Jane responded, with American Principals Project, and they've been leading the fight across the nation. And she said that's what we're hearing all over the country from these administrators and these education bureaucrats, is they're dismissing the claims of parents and blaming it on poor implementation. So, and that's exactly what this superintendent said to this parent. Well, I'm not sure what's happening in your school, but it must be poor implementation, and just dismissed it in that way. So what's happened with the Common Core debate in South Carolina and from what Jane said across the country, is that you've got a handful of education bureaucrats, superintendents and school administrators, and then you've got hundreds of thousands of parents on the other side. And instead of listening to the parents' concerns and the few teachers that are bold enough to speak up, the lawmakers and decision makers are basing their decisions on what these handful of bureaucrats are saying. And that's exactly what happened in our Senate subcommittee meeting a couple of weeks ago. Every senator on that K-12 committee said, I have talked to my local school district superintendent and they like it. And then sitting in the audience were, you know, 200 parents wearing Stop Common Core buttons. So they were just dismissing us and going with these education bureaucrats' decisions.
It's like they think that it's all an extension of the Tea Party, but the Common Core opponents are across the board. They're not just conservatives. They're from every ilk. You know, you've got some progressives. You've got some Democrats. You've got some libertarians. You've got Republicans. You've got conservatives. Every single parent is looking at what their child is coming home with.
Not only that, Annie, the parents that come to our meetings and talk to me about their children often are parents that have never been politically active. So some of these aren't affiliated with any sort of political action. They are simply parents that know something's wrong with their children, and they want to do whatever they can to protect them.
Yeah.
Yeah. What, Sherry? What? When was the moment, the day, down to the second, where you basically said, "You know what? I'm doing this." You know, you were just absolutely. You decided, "I'm running." Where you had the final straw, and that was it.
Well, I don't know if I can get you down to the second, but I can tell you. I can tell you that back in the fall, it was rumored that Dr. Zase was not going to seek re-election. And I had two people, two separate individuals whom I respect and trusted, about a week or two apart, called me and asked me to consider running. And I told both of them no. I mean, I said no. I mean, I'm doing what I need to be doing. That's not on my radar at all. But I'll help you find someone is what I offered to do. So I called a few people I knew that I thought would be good, that are like-minded, and I couldn't get anybody to do it either. So I just kind of let that go, and I kept pushing forward and making my presentations on Common Core and staying very busy doing all of that. And I showed up at a forum in Florence. It was the Florence Tea Party, and I was in that forum. I was also joined by Senator Larry Grooms, who's our primary sponsor of our repeal bill. So we were both featured speakers that evening. And before the event started, Senator Grooms said, "Sherry, wouldn't you at least pray about running for superintendent of education?" Of course, he knew he could get me that way because I can't refuse to pray about it. So I agreed to pray about it. And after a few weeks, it was over Christmas, and I had tried to take a little time off with my family, which is really hard to do. But I spoke with my family, and I sought the Lord on this. And then I began to make a few calls to the leadership of the – we have like five regional work groups under the nonprofit that have been working on this. I mean, there's hundreds of activists in the state who have helped us advance this issue. So I called all of those leaders to see what they thought about it because I didn't want to do anything to jeopardize all of the hard work we had done. And every single one of them told me they thought it was a good idea, that it would only advance our message, and it would require the candidates in this race to talk about Common Core and make it the central issue, which is exactly what has happened. And then I began calling the Tea Party leaders around the state because I really know that they'll be an establishment candidate, and that will probably be my greatest opposition. But if I can have the support of most of the Tea Party leaders in the state and the Tea Party groups, then I thought I could win this. So I was trying to size up my ability to win. And there wasn't a single Tea Party leader that I spoke to that didn't agree to support me. So that's when I decided to do it.
Man, we're so glad that you are. And I'm going to go back to this Palmetto Policy Forum report. The people are waving around saying, "Listen, Common Core is not that bad. We should keep parts of it." And I was reading it, and I was going through their executive summary. I've got marks all over this piece of paper. You've got to be kidding me. Because they're saying, we said this before, that we can revise the Common Core, but it only allows you 15%, and that 15%, as I understand it, is the part that is not tested. Am I getting this right?
That's correct. That's correct. And you know, if it's not going to be on the test, it's not going to be taught in the classroom. Yeah, the Palmetto Policy Forum report was not good. I mean, there are some good points in the executive summary that I could live with, but you know, this thought that we can't stop it, you know, that hurts us. When a group that is known to be conservative, because this group is funded by Jim DeMint, and you know, he's been our hero in the past, and he's supposed to be ultra conservative. So when an organization like that puts out a faulty report, and really the biggest problems are beyond the executive summary. It's almost as though they dressed up the executive summary a little bit because they knew that's all people would read. But when you get into the details of it, there's so much false information in there. They call the Fordham Institute a conservative organization when, you know, they only take their position because they're paid by Bill Gates to do it. They give kudos to Jeb Bush. I mean, it's really a bad document. Poorly researched. And it hurts our movement. And their timing was especially bad. It's almost like they intentionally dropped that report right before our Senate hearings on Common Core. And I have no doubt that it influenced the legislators. And that's why we put out a counter statement and we made sure that all the senators had that.
Oh, I'm glad you did. Because as you said, you know, the executive summary is really, it's dressed up because there are some good points in it. One of them about restructuring the state education governance so it adheres to the congressional district. I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
It was saying to reject the federal funding.
Right.
I agree with that. But then when it comes down to, I'm looking at point number 8, they say demand the current Common Core aligned math and English language standards only if funding represents a net saving over reversing course. And you know the moment you say reversing course and they start to do the dollars and cents, you know it's going to cost a big penny. Because it costs a lot of money to implement Common Core, it's going to cost even more to reverse it.
Yeah.
So that already it negates itself.
Right, right. And you know, they're going to inflate those numbers anyway because the report on what it's going to cost is going to come from the establishment, the bureaucrat establishment of education. And, you know, this came up at our forum last week, too, about the cost to repeal Common Core and revert. You know, and I believe the numbers that they gave were faulty. But what I responded to in that forum is I said, there is no price that you can put on the damage that's happening to children and the destruction of public education that's happening through Common Core. So we have to cut our losses, whatever they are, and change course. We can't let money that's gone into this or money heretofore that we're going to have to spend, you know, stop us from doing what's right in this situation.
Now, your lips to God's ears. Man, I mean, we have two bills in. Oh, here they are. We got in the Senate, we've got 300. And then in the House, we've got H3943. Now, as I understand, there were some amendments put on 300?
Yes. Some very bad amendments, the worst of which keeps Common Core. It keeps Common Core for at least another 4 years. And the only good thing that came out of the amendment was the rejection of the Smarter Balance Assessment, which is the federal government's pipeline to student-level data in our state, and it's, you know, it's the Common Core test. So it did get us out of that. But, you know, and one other thing that's really bad in the amendments is for the first time in our state's history, we will be mandated by law to have federal or national tests. So I don't know what they were thinking when they added that. That must have been part of the compromise. But that absolutely has to be stripped from that legislation. So the good news is we did get the commitment to get out of Smarter Balance, and we did get the bill out of the K-12 committee, meaning it advances to the full education committee. So there will be plenty of opportunities as the bill moves forward to strip the bad things and revert it and make it even a stronger repeal bill. So that's the goal, and we understand that that was a strategy for the compromise. And as much as we hate the compromise and we don't like the amendments, we're just going to have to trust that those who are within the system that are fighting, leading the fight against it in the Senate, this is their strategy, and we just have to trust that, you know, they're going to be able to take out the bad parts of the amendments. And, of course, that's only going to happen if we continue to lean on that. So while we have been focused on the Senate Education Committee for some time, we need to really double down now because the bill is progressing to the full education committee. And if your listeners haven't already done this, if they'll go to our website, which you mentioned earlier, at cpiesdpi.org, and sign up for action alerts, we're actually going to get one out this afternoon that's going to explain what happened and what the next steps are, and we're going to provide them all of the email addresses of the Senate Education Committee and ask them to contact them. So we need hundreds of South Carolina taxpayers and parents and teachers, whoever, emailing the Senate Education Committee, and we'll give them some direction about what they can demand from the legislature.
All right, and your campaign website is sherryfew.com. Sherry spelled S-H-E-R-I. So if anyone wants to go to your website, it would be Sherry, S-H-E-R-I-E. Teeth and backwards, sherifew.com. And there's a link on the show page that they can also click on that one. And, I mean, the more I delve into Common Core, the more my head starts to explode. And people aren't paying attention to it because they said, oh, it's not a sexy subject. You know, it's education. Yeah, how much can they screw up education? But education really is getting screwed up pretty badly. I was looking at some of the math problems people were posting up on Facebook, and I just was shaking my head. How do you make 2 plus 2 equal 5?
Yeah, it's really bad, and you know, as we discussed earlier, it is an issue that everybody needs to be paying attention to. Everybody that loves our country, and especially, you know, Republicans have not been outspoken on education. Usually, all we hear from when it comes to the education topic is from the Democrats. So it's time for the Republicans to take lead on education.
And I hope they do. And I look at some of the people that are supporting it, and you threw out the name Jeb Bush, and the second I hear Jeb Bush, I cringe. Wasn't he the one just a couple of years ago said that he is not a conservative because he didn't like what the Tea Party stood for? And you're gonna hold him up as saying, well, this person said he supports Common Core. Then you also have Mike Huckabee, who I say is still a rhino completely, even though he's gaming himself for another presidential run. He was telling people, well, just change the name of Common Core and put it back out there. Does it make sense?
Yeah. That's unfortunate that, you know, that's what the other side touts, is that I've got something in my throat. I apologize. My voice is going on me. Yeah. And maybe that's a good reason for us to try to wrap up. Because I really need to get moving, Annie. I apologize.
That's all right.
But I really appreciate this opportunity to speak to you, and I hope we can do this again soon.
Oh, absolutely. We will bring you back on. That is not an and if or what. It will be when.
Very good. Well, I'll look forward to that. And
okay.
Yeah, and if you could just let me ask your listeners, too, then if they like what they've heard about me as a candidate, I could really use their support. They could go to the website and sign up to volunteer and make a donation. And any size donation is helpful.
Well, I'll push them that way for you, Sherry. Good luck, and I'll be talking with you.
All right. Thanks, Annie.
Okay.
Bye now.
And just take care. All right. It's sherryfew.com. I'm putting a link up in the chat room as we speak, and my co-host seems to have dropped off. And I wish my co-host would call back so we can continue with the show. But meanwhile, I'm putting it up here in the chat room. It's http://www.sherryfew.com. And her other site is http://scpi.org. And both of the links are up in the chat room. But for now, for all the other politicians out there, I'm going to dedicate this song to them. Charles Durning from the Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. I love a little sidestep. When you hear a politician talk, think of this song.
Ladies and gentlemen, His Excellency, the Governor of Texas.
My friends, I want to thank you for that sincere and heartwarming ovation.
No questions, please.
Governor, what do you think of crisis in the Middle East?
I was saying just this morning at the weekly prayer breakfast in this historic capital that it behooves both the Jews and the Arabs to settle their differences in a Christian manner.
Governor,
we got
have you seen the evidence of the disgraceful situation at the chicken ranch?
Fellow Texans, I am proudly standing here to humbly see. And I mean it. Now who says I don't speak out as plain as day? And fellow Texans, I'm for progress and the flag. Long may it fly. I'm a poor boy come to greatness. So it follows that I cannot tell a lie.
What the hell did he say?
Same as usual, not same thing.
Ooh, I love to dance a little sidestep.
me to be solemn and declare I'm for goodness and for profit and for living clean and saying daily prayer. And now, my good friend, you can slip right out into you to stand tall. You can trust me, for I promise you I shall keep a watchful eye upon you.
I hear him talking, but he don't come in.
Ooh, I love to dance a little sidestep. Now they see me, now they don't have to stand on. Ooh, I love to sneak around the white step. A little twice and leave the beat for long.
Hey, you, come on, boy.
Go, smell the people. Watch your feet.
Why has the chicken ranch operation been so long ignored?
We seem to be having some acoustic problems in here.
Aren't you afraid of possible payoffs and bribes?
Nothing. I'm sorry.
Enough of this pussyfooting, Governor. What do you intend to do about Miss Mona and the chicken ranch?
Now, Miss Mona, I don't know her. Though I've heard the name, oh yes. But of course I have no close contact. So what she is doing, I can only guess. And now Miss Mona, she's a blemish on the face of that good town. I am taking certain steps here. Someone somewhere's gonna have to close her down.
Can you believe that, man?
Is that a yes or no?
It's possible, maybe.
Ooh, I love to dance a little sidestep. Now they see me, now they don't. I'm and gone. Ooh, I love to sweep around the white step. Cut a little twat and leave the people on. I love to dance a little sidestep. Ooh, I love to sweep around the white step. Not to let swap and leave the people.
All right, Charles Durning, I love a little sidestep from the best little whorehouse in Texas. I love that song. Whenever I go into the voting booth, I have that song playing in the back of my head. Now, everyone knows that, you know, we honor our military here, and I don't know if anyone else caught this. This was from the Daily Caller. A Department of Veterans Affairs employee has admitted to destroying veterans' medical records to cancel backlogged exam requests. Now, catch this. You've got vets that are showing up at the VA expecting to, not showing up, but they're submitting for whether or not it's an MRI, an X-ray, or whatever it is, so they can get their benefits, they can get their treatment, what they need. But instead, they find out now that the Veterans Affairs has been destroying their records. And once they destroy the records, there's nothing there. There's no recourse for them at all. There's nothing. If those records are destroyed, there's no record of them ever even applying for a benefit. And this is what they're doing to our vets out there, guys. You know, this administration has gone after them over and over and over again. Our military, they're downsizing. They're restricting their rights to religion. They're restricting their rights to free speech. They're forcing issues on them that is impossible. You have, you know, gay couples in the military having more rights than a heterosexual couple. It's absolutely outrageous. This is from the audio. I don't have the actual clip with me, but this is from the dialogue of what was going on. You hear a male in the meeting saying, I'm canceling orders from 2001. Then a female official, one of his bosses, says anything over a year should be canceled. And he asks her again. He says, canceled or scheduled? She replies, canceled. Your backlog should start at April of 07, she added. A lot of those patients either had their studies somewhere else or had their surgery or died or don't live in the state. It's ridiculous. She's calling our military people ridiculous. She's assuming that simply because these orders are several years old, not months, mind you, not months. Their backlog was several years, people waiting for surgeries, waiting for MRIs, waiting for x-rays, waiting to see a doctor. Several years old, these orders. And the VA has not responded to them. So she's saying, cancel them. Simply cancel them. Destroy the records. And once those records are destroyed, it's as if the veteran had never, ever applied. Now, the person's name was El Sadin, and the person who was the whistleblower, his name was Mitchell. And he said that he was trying to blow the whistle on the VA. This is a VA office in Los Angeles. He's been trying to blow the whistle on the scheme, and he ended up being transferred out of his department, and eventually he lost his job. He said, I actually filed a complaint with the VA Inspector General and the Office of Special Counsel. The Inspector General requested if I have any documentation. They wanted names. I gave them about 1,000 names. The list I turned into the IG went all the way back to 1997. So this isn't something that's been going on for a year, because remember, she said destroy everything up to 07. So you're talking about a 10-year time frame of veterans having their claims completely trashed. How many of these men and women died because they didn't get these tests and didn't get these surgeries? That's a question I would like to know. How many of our veterans, in a sense, essentially have been murdered because this official said trash the records? Mitchell eventually wrote to Congress about the issue in January of 2011. 2 months later, in March of 2011, he was fired. He received a letter from the U.S. Office of Special Counsel, this was in April of 2013, stating that the OIG found in November 2009 that all imaging services across the country were instructed to mass purge all outstanding imaging orders for studies older than 6 months, where the procedure was no longer needed, and that patient imaging requests found to still be valid were scheduled. So in other words, she's saying, no matter what, trash the records. They're saying, if it's no longer needed, get rid of them. Now, that makes sense. But to trash every single record simply because you have a backlog is not correct. It's not right. Mitchell said that in Los Angeles, exam requests that were found to still be needed were definitely destroyed. He's saying that these records were destroyed. The AG's report said this was a nationwide issue, but I know we were having our meeting. We weren't talking nationwide. We were talking about our department, Mitchell said. It's the policy of the OSC not to transmit an allegation of wrongdoing to the head of the agency involved, where the agency's OIG or its delegate is currently investigating or has investigated the same allegations. Consequently, this office will take no further action concerning this allegation. This is according to the U.S. Office of Special Counsel letter. So in other words, they're covering up. They're dropping the investigation. So ladies and gentlemen, this is something that should be getting out over the airwaves. The fact that the Office of Veterans Affairs are destroying records. They're destroying records of our veterans requesting services they rightly deserve. They should get. They must get. But because they have such a backlog, and they're too damn embarrassed about the length of their backlog, they're destroying the records and thus harming our veterans. So I want you guys to take a look around your neighborhood, around your state, and find out whether or not they're doing that in your state. If they're doing it out in Los Angeles, and this guy is saying it is systemic, it is nationwide, we've got to protect our veterans. They gave everything to protect us. It's our responsibility now to pay them back and protect them. And I'll tell you what, my favorite senator in the whole wide world, Senator Lindsey Graham, is going to be having a fundraiser, what they call a low country boil, and it's going to be at one of our local restaurants. and it's going to be Friday, March 14th. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be asking him about this. If he's such a great advocate for veterans, why isn't he on top of this? Why isn't he screaming at the top of his lungs about this issue? Why do we have to find it buried on the Internet in the Daily Caller? Why isn't this front page news? I don't even know what further to say because I am so angry. I am absolutely fuming about the way this administration treats our military and our veterans. And I'm not going to let this issue go. I'm going to keep on talking about it. And if I show up in someone else's show, I'm going to bring the issue up and ask them, what are they doing about it? Who are they calling, and how are they helping to defend our veterans? Well, our show is just about over. We're down to our last few minutes. I want to remind you, we will be back on Tuesday. And Tuesday, our guest is going to be Katrina Pearson. She's running for Congress from Texas. And she's a little firebrand. I had the pleasure of meeting her 2 years ago at the Tea Party Convention up here in South Carolina. And I can tell you, she is a absolute fireball. So I'm going to enjoy having her with us on the show. So please join us again. Come back with us on Tuesday, same bat time, same bat station. And I hope you enjoyed the show. And remember, you can find us here on Blog Talk Radio as well as Kinetic Hi-Fi out of Charleston, South Carolina. Until then, you have a healthy, happy, and safe weekend. Good night, and God bless.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.
American.